Holy Spirit, I pray that you would come and you would speak to each one of us as we consider this passage. Would you come and have your way over these next few moments? Amen. In our society today and in our language, we often throw around or use different phrases in a sort of light and banterous way that often have sometimes like a deeper or sometimes darker historic origin. Do you know what I mean? There's some phrases that we just say as part of our everyday language that actually sometimes has quite an interesting meaning. I've got a few of them on the screen that I want to share with you. The first one is this one here, spill the beans. It'll come up on the screen. Spill the beans. Everyone heard this before? Spill the beans. Well, this actually originated because of the ancient Greek process of voting, right? Very timely. But back in the Greek days, you didn't go into your local primary school to vote. But instead what you did is you took one of two different coloured beans and you put them into a jar. That's how you used to cast your vote. And this phrase came about because when the jar was toppled over at the end and the beans were spilled, then the results of the election were known and all that information was shared. They had spilled the beans. Bet you didn't know that. There you go. You can't say you haven't learned anything this morning. Here's another one. Turn a blind eye. This is another phrase we use. Now, apparently this came from the British naval hero Horatio Nelson. Okay, and this fella had one blind eye. And he was fighting on the seas and the British forces were signalling for him to stop attacking a fleet of ships. But this guy didn't want to stop attacking the fleet of ships. So what he did was he took his telescope up to his blind eye and then later on he said that he didn't see the signal. And that's where that phrase comes from, apparently, according to Google. So there you go. Here's another one. Give the cold shoulder. We've all heard of this before. Now, in medieval England, it was customary to give your guest a piece of cold meat from the shoulder of pork or lamb or whatever you were serving. And you would do that as a polite way of saying that they weren't particularly welcome in your home. Okay? Apparently, the hot meat and the prime cuts were reserved for people who were welcome in your home, and you would give people the cold shoulder if they weren't welcome in your home. So if anyone's going for Sunday dinner at somebody else's house this afternoon, you can look out for that one. And here's the final one, bite the bullet. Bite the bullet. In the olden days, when they were performing surgeries or operations, they would often ask a patient to bite down on a metal bullet to distract from the pain. The person was biting the bullet and they were going through the pain. So there you go. If you have any questions about any of those, take them up with Google. But here's the thing. We can often throw around phrases that have sometimes a deeper meaning to them. And I want to think about one phrase this morning as we approach Psalm 31. I want to think about a phrase that we often use, and it's going to come up on the screen. It's this phrase here, control freak. Control freak, okay? We've all heard this phrase before, and we've often maybe said this about ourselves or about somebody else, or I'm just a control freak. Quick show of hands. Does anybody know somebody who they would say is a bit of a control freak in their life? Put your hand up if you think you know somebody who's a control freak. I'm not trying to start any arguments here. You know what they say? If you don't know one of them, then you probably are one, so you can have a think about that. But this is a popular phrase that we use. But if we actually take a second to think about this phrase, what a thing to actually say about yourself or about somebody else. Oh, I'm just a control freak. I do believe, though, as a society, that we are people who can and who do become control freaks. What I mean by that is we're not people who are great at trust. We find it very, very difficult to genuinely surrender and to entrust ourselves to other people. And we all recognize that. There's a worldwide research piece called the Edelman Trust Barometer. I have a picture of it on the next slide. The Edelman Trust Barometer. And this literally is a piece of research that measures trust in society. And this research finds that right now, the generation that is living right now is the least trusting generation in history. It measured specifically in the UK a mass decline in trust in business, in government, in media, in NGOs. We are not a trusting people. That's why we lock our houses. It's why we often keep ourselves to ourselves. It's why we're so quick to second guess people's motives. We are not a trusting people. And then here's what happens. When we live in a world where we feel like we can't trust other people, we often take on the job ourselves. We only trust ourselves. And we don't want to hand over our life or our emotions or our financial security or our future. We want to be in control. We, by nature, are control freaks. And I think this shows itself most obviously when life gets difficult. When life gets difficult, when we are suffering, we can often clamber for the controls. Hard times and suffering can so often lead us to forgetting God, to putting Him on the sidelines, and to reaching for the controls ourselves. And you know, this morning you might be walking through a real suffering. You might be facing physical enemies like David was in this psalm, in Psalm 31. But we also could be facing those enemies of the soul that we talk about, the world and the flesh and the devil. And these battles are making us grab for the controls. Well, this beautiful psalm, which we're going to think about, gives an amazing model of how we can move from being people of control, how we can move from being control freaks like the world into being people of deeper trust, which is what God is calling us to be. So how do we surrender control? How do we be people of trust, even in difficulty and in suffering? Well, as I said, this psalm helps to model it to us. And the first way that we become people of trust and move from being control freaks is by giving space to suffering. Giving space to suffering. You know, one of the biggest tactics of control, one of the biggest ways that we don't demonstrate trust, is to bury and to bypass and to not recognize that things have got difficult. But right in the belly of this psalm, right in the middle of Psalm 31, verses 9 to 13, which I have on the next screen, right in the middle of the psalm, David gives space to speak out his trouble before God. And we can read it right through these verses. He says, "Be merciful to me, Lord, for I am in distress." He says in verse 10, "My life is consumed with anguish." Verse 11, "Because of all my enemies and the utter contempt of my neighbors." Verse 12, "I'm forgotten as though I was dead." And he speaks in verse 13 about people conspiring against him and plotting to take his life. David gives space to speak out his trouble before God. And we see that David's facing trouble in many ways. It's believed that David wrote this psalm, Psalm 31, when he was on the run, when he was fearing for his life, when there was a threat out on his life. That's where he finds himself when he writes the psalm. Now, there's a split opinion whether this psalm was written when David was on the run from King Saul back at that time when we all know how he got there. David was a shepherd boy. He stumbled across that battlefield. He fought and defeated Goliath. He went from zero to hero in the eyes of Israel, but he went from zero to being a very real threat to King Saul. And he found himself on the run from King Saul at that time. Some people think it was then. Other people think it was later in life. And when David was on the run from his own son, Absalom, who was plotting to take over the kingdom and plotting to kill David. But either way, in this psalm, David finds himself on the run, fearing for his life every single day. And we read over and over again how this is consuming his mind. He says he's a subject of contempt. I hear many whispering, terror on every side. They conspire against me and plot to take my life. David's found himself in a difficult, difficult time. And so helpful for us as believers to see how David, a hero of the faith, encounters suffering and difficulty. And this psalm shows how every area of David's life is marked with suffering. We see how he's suffering emotionally. Verse 7 speaks about the anguish of his soul. We see he's suffering physically in verse 10, where he says that his strength fails because of his affliction. He's suffering socially and relationally, where he says he's the contempt of his neighbours and an object of dread to his closest friends. And we see that he's suffering spiritually, where he says to God, "In my alarm, I feel like I'm cut off from your sight, God." This psalm, it gives voice to whatever suffering we might be walking through or might yet walk through. David knew suffering. And this psalm, it gives space to suffering and to crying out to God in honesty. It's so easy to make these the times where our faith is distant and where we disconnect from God and from one another and from church. But this psalm shows that in this time, this is the time to come honestly before God and to cast our care upon him because he cares for us. So firstly, I just want this to be a reminder. Let this psalm give voice to whatever you're walking through this morning. That's what the psalms are. They're songs that are put on the lips of the people of Israel. They're put on the lips of us as New Testament believers. But they're also songs that bring beautiful hope and help and guidance. So whether it's a minor trial or a major trauma that you find yourself in, cast your care upon him because he cares for you. Don't grow distant from God, but invite him in. Invite him in. Physically speak that out. Invite God in. God, I invite you in. Satan, the enemy, loves to isolate us in our suffering. But I just want to encourage you this morning to invite God in. Eugene Peterson, one of my all-time favorite writers, says this amazing quote about suffering. He says, "All suffering, all pain, all emptiness, all disappointment is seed. Sow it into God, and he will finally bring a crop of joy from it." Sow your suffering into God. Invite him in. David doesn't forget God in this moment of deep difficulty, but not only does he give space to his suffering in verses 9 to 13, but he also surrounds his trouble with trust. He surrounds his trouble with trust. And quite literally, in this psalm, David surrounds his trouble with trust. I love the shape of this psalm and how it's crafted. David is an amazing lyricist, an amazing craftsman. It's one of the main things that stood out to me when I was studying this psalm. I have it on the next slide. This is the entirety of Psalm 31. And the troubles that David speaks out to God is found right in the middle. That black text, that is David speaking out his suffering. But both before and after, David declares his trust in God over and over and over again. And I think that is so powerful. You know, if it was me writing this psalm, it would probably only be, it definitely would only be the black. It would just be me speaking out my suffering to God. At very best, I would definitely start with that. But David begins this psalm with trust and with hope and with faith and with belief. Verse 1, he starts this psalm, "In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge." In the middle of all that he's going through, "In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge." And then after he pours out his heart in verses 9 to 13, we see on the next slide, this beautiful hinge in verse 14. But I trust in you, Lord. I trust you. In the middle of everything, I trust you. And I find that so powerful. David's trouble was great, but his trust was even greater. And he declares trust in loads of places in this psalm. He says in verse 1, in you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Verse 3, you're my rock and my fortress. Verse 5, my faithful God. Verse 20, the shelter of your presence. Verse 23, the Lord preserves those who are true to him. He declares trust time and time again. And very simply this morning, I want to encourage you as well to surround your trouble with trust. The more we give voice to our troubles and our difficulty, whatever enemy you're facing this morning, and then the more we declare with our heart and our lips that we trust God, the more the grip of control begins to loosen. And God can step in and lead and guide and deliver and restore. So we move from being control freaks to people of trust, firstly by bringing our suffering and our trials before God, not burying or isolating ourselves from him, and then by surrounding our trouble with prayers and with acts of trust. We even did that this morning, didn't we? King of my heart, even in the midst of trials and difficulty, singing out, you'll never let me down. Or God, you are good. Surrounding our troubles with trust. But finally, and it all really boils down to this, in order to move from being control freaks to people of trust, we need to follow the way of Jesus. Follow the way of Jesus. Here's the thing, we're not the first generation of people who want to hold tightly to the controls. We're not the first generation in history to have trust issues. This actually finds its source all the way back in the garden when Adam and Eve bought into that original lie that God can't be trusted. When the enemy whispered, did God really say that? Can God really be trusted? And that first act of rebellion, it was the first and great take matters into your own hands moment. That is the source of this trust issue. But if we want to see that curse broken in our lives, if we want to be set free from the lie that God can't be trusted, then we need to follow the way of Jesus. We need to follow Jesus' example. And we see so beautifully how Jesus reversed the great lie that God can't be trusted when he quoted this exact psalm, when he quoted Psalm 31, his final words on the cross. Of all the sermons and the parables and the wise words and the teachings that Jesus gave, it all came down to this. His very final words, which we have on the next slide. Jesus' very final words, a direct quote from Psalm 31, where he said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Into your hands I commit, I entrust my spirit. Jesus models ultimate trust in the ultimate trial. And as he leaps into the void of death, he declares trust in the Father, knowing that the Father will catch him and there will be resurrection life. Jesus proves that God can be trusted. So if we want to live as people of trust instead of people of control, then we too need to actively, consciously, with everything that we have, recognize that God can be trusted and commit ourselves to him. This has to be raised over every corner of our life. We have to raise this up. Father, into your hands I commit my life. Father, into your hands I commit this trial. Father, into your hands I commit the suffering that I'm walking through. Father, into your hands I commit my family. I commit my future. Father, into your hands I commit myself. So this morning, very simply, I want this psalm to lead us into a fresh call to trust in God. Whether you are facing a minor trial or a major trauma, whether it's your future or your family or a relationship, whatever it is, let this psalm lead us into a deeper trust. Let's follow the way of Jesus. Why do we stand together?